You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
Welcome to MLB.com Extras. I'm Danny Wexelman with Jane Lee, who covers the athletics for MLB.com. And Jane, you have been on a whirlwind worldwide tour. How are your travels? What's going on? Welcome home.
Thanks. Yeah, we could spend an entire podcast talking about my travels. I was in South Africa for a couple weeks. So, I mean, there's so much. Yeah, I kind of compare it to going to California. It's where there's just endless things to do. Safari, wine country, beaches, mountains. Yeah, it was incredible. The travel is long, but I would tell anyone that it's definitely worth it.
Awesome. All right. Well, I'm very excited to have you back. Ken Korak did a great job hanging out and filling in for you. So no worries on that end. We got all our athletics news from that fine gentleman. And now, Jane, we are going to put on our projection hats because you and all of the other reporters here at MLB.com have been doing a lot of predicting. And the A's, I think, are starting to feel some excitement in the air when you look at their lineup. We're looking at guys like Matt Chapman, Matt Olson, Stephen Piscotty, the newest bat there in Oakland. And they're trying to fortify the lineup. They're trying to not rely on the long ball. But we're going to look outside the box and look at what the lineup could be like if the season started today, Jane. What kind of lineup are we looking at?
Yeah, I mean, I think that you know, there's obviously a ton of power. We saw a good dose of it last year, probably more than A's fans are accustomed to seeing. And I think that'll definitely be back next year, obviously with Chris Davis. You know, you look at what Matt Olson did with a small sample size, and it's probably unfair and irresponsible to expect him to kind of continue the way he was just because it was at that crazy pace. But I do think that, you know, over the course of a 162-game season, you're still going to see a ton of homers from him. I think we haven't really seen the best of Matt Chapman yet. I think he's still kind of developing, and I could see a lot of power coming from him. And then, you know, you look around those guys, too. I mean, there's a lot of nice complementary pieces, guys that are going to, you know, quietly add some power, too, guys like Matt Joyce, Marcus Semien. I think it'll be interesting to see what Semien does do with now that he's fully healthy again, just because I think everyone's kind of been waiting to watch him put it all together, and the potential is definitely there. So I would suspect that he could start the season in the leadoff spot. He did it a lot last year. I do think also that Dustin Fowler, you know, once he's played a little bit with this team, that he's a guy that could also be in that leadoff spot. You know, the A's, I know the A's want to see, you know, how his knee responds to spring training in his first camp with them. But I do think that he'll be fully fine, ready to go once the season starts, and eventually we could see him in the leadoff spot. So I think it's a well-rounded lineup. The big thing for them is just kind of staying consistent, not relying on that home run too much. That hurt them at times last year, and just getting on base more. But I do think that the offense will definitely be the strength of this team.
Yeah, I'm listening to you list off each and every one of these names, and I feel excited. I feel like there's going to be a really good product, and I think that they're going to be able to string a lot of different baseball hitting scenarios together and manufacture runs, more runs this year. So hopefully this youth movement that Billy Beane has been preaching about will come full circle, and the picture will become much more clear. When it comes to the bullpen, we're going to talk bullpen right now. And we've got Blake Treinen, Liam Hendricks, Yusmeiro Petit, who was just acquired. So I'm wondering, Jane, if you could tell me who would be our closer on opening day and what the rest of the bullpen would look like.
Yeah, I think Treinen will likely be back in that closer's role. I think Bob Melvin has a ton of setup options right now, guys that can not only set up, but, you know, be versatile too, and maybe provide some long relief, which I think will be important. Just considering there's a lot of unknowns right now with the rotation, just because I think that there's just, you know, guys that have yet to fully prove themselves, and I'm not sure that it's a rotation that they can really rely on just yet, and that makes the bullpen that much more important. So So behind Trinan, I mean, there's guys with a lot of experience in that setup role, guys like Chris Hatcher, Ismael Petit has done it. Emilio Pagan was fantastic in that role as a rookie for Seattle last year. And guys that, you know, are also familiar to A's fans, guys like Ryan Dole and Hendricks. And then they've got that one, they have one lefty in there right now, Daniel Coulomb. And I know that adding another lefty has been on their to-do list all winter. That's definitely something that they're still looking at. So I wouldn't be surprised to see another addition in that regard. So I could see some heavy competition in spring training within the bullpen because, I mean, not only the guys that we've been talking about, but there's other guys that have spent time in the rotation that probably are going to be pushed out of the rotation and thus kind of fighting for a bullpen job. Guys like Andrew Triggs, Chris Bassett, who was making his way back from Tommy John last year. There's also Frankie Montas, Raul Alcantara. So a lot of names. And the A's always pride themselves in pitching depth, and that's something that they definitely have this year. It's just kind of a question of who stays healthy, you know, who's in, who's out when camp closes, because there's so many names in the bag right now, and obviously so many spots.
Yeah, absolutely, Jane. And like you just mentioned, a strong bullpen to help this starting rotation, which we're going to talk about in a second. But we have talked about Sean Manaea and Kendall Graveman and that fans should be excited to see those guys in that starting rotation. But there's also guys like Andrew Triggs and Jarrell Cotton and Paul Blackburn. And I'm wondering, again, if you could tell me who the starting five would be for the A's, what do you think it's going to look like?
Yeah, I mean, I think if the season started tomorrow, as we all wrote this week, you know, I would put Manaea and Graveman in those two spots. And then beyond that, I definitely see Paul Blackburn in there. I mean, the A's were really high on him just based on his work last year. Ended the season with that freak injury, got hit in the pitching hand. And so he had that deep bone bruise, but he'll be back in camp healthy, so I would suspect to see him in there. And based on the way Daniel Mingden finished the season, I mean, he's a legit contender. I think they're counting on him being in there. And right now I would have to give that last spot to Jarrell Cotton. You know, gave them innings last year. Obviously had his struggles, but, I mean, I think everyone in that rotation dealt with struggles, dealt with injury. So he wasn't alone in that regard. And I still think that the ceiling is pretty high for him. And I know that they still see a lot of potential in him. Kind of like Manaea, I think that with Cotton, you know, they're just kind of waiting for him to put it all together. And the fact that they haven't gone out and added a starter really demonstrates just their faith in these guys and the hope that they can put it all together this year. And beyond that, there's several other names that will be vying for a spot. I know it's sometimes easy to forget about Jesse Hahn, but
sure.
You know, he's a guy that in the past has done really well for them and has been back and forth in recent years. Daniel Gossett got a taste of the big leagues last year and looked really good at times. So he'll be given a chance. And I know Triggs would love to come back as a starter after his season ended kind of prematurely because of hip surgery, but you know, he is one of those guys like Bassett to where they might consider a bullpen role just because of the configuration of the roster right now. So depth is definitely a strong suit of theirs, but again, there's only so many guys right now that you can really lock in there, and it's going to be interesting because I think, you know, for any team, of course, the rotation changes throughout the course of the season, and with the A's, I definitely think the opening day rotation is not the rotation we're going to see, you know, maybe even 2 weeks in. So I see a lot of movement there just because I think they're going to have to try to find the right pieces, and they're still in the process of doing that, and I think it'll continue well into the season.
All right, development. We're also going to talk about some rookie career development. AJ Puck attended and represented the Athletics. Our MLB Pipeline's Jim Callis caught up with AJ Puck last week at the rookie career development program, and here's what he had to say.
AJ, you're here at the Rookie Career Development Program. What did you know about the program before you came out here, and how helpful do you think it'll be once you get to the big leagues?
I heard a little bit about it from a couple guys I work out with that have done it recently, I think last year. And there's been a lot of topics we've covered, and it's been really helpful.
How about your first year in professional baseball, very successful. You got to Double-A, you finished among the minor league strikeout leaders. What did you learn, I guess, during that first full season in pro ball? What went well for you, and what do you think you need to work on to make the final jump up to the big leagues?
It was a good year. Just learning my routine, learning what works for me, just working on developing all my pitches. I started throwing a curveball again this year, and then towards the end of the year, everything started coming together. Just mechanic wise and everything, it felt good. And I'd say overall, just consistency. Work on being consistent. Every start, and we'll see what happens.
I guess you're probably best known from a pitching standpoint for the fastball and the slider. How are the curveball and changeup coming along?
My changeup, I'd say, last year's one was probably like my second pitch. I enjoyed throwing that more than my slider. And I could throw it any count that I wanted to. I had really good control of it. And curveball's coming along. Beginning of the year is inconsistent, and towards the end, middle to end, it was getting there. Able to dump it for strikes when I need to, just change the speeds. So
you weren't able to be a direct participant, but how much pride did you take when you saw Florida win the College World Series finally? I mean, you were teammates obviously with a lot of those guys, mm-hmm. and I know from, I guess, talking to guys, like, I've had this conversation with Derek Fisher. Virginia won it the year after he left, but mm-hmm. I mean, how much pride did you take seeing those guys finally punch through and win it?
I got a couple of friends that were there, and a couple are still there. It's good to see them win, all the work that everyone puts in to finally get there. We went twice when I was there, and we last year we went 0-2 now, but it was good to see them finally break through.
Were you able to follow it much during the season? Were you keeping track of it as it was going on?
When I was in the hotel room, I was flipping back and forth between, I was watching a movie on HBO, I was kind of going back and forth in between, but I was able to keep up with it here and there when I could.
Okay. We have some fun questions we're asking everybody. What uniform number do you wear, and why do you pick that number?
What uniform number?
Yeah.
I've had it all different. I really don't have a uniform. It's just whatever it's first available. That's all right with me.
Gotcha. I guess as a big guy, a lot of times you probably growing up had to take whatever one fits you.
Yeah, just the biggest one, I'll take it.
How about, do you have a celebrity lookalike that people say you resemble?
A celebrity lookalike? I don't think so. I don't know. I haven't seen too many people.
So nobody's tagged you with one of those?
No, maybe a couple cartoons, but I don't know.
How about a craziest baseball experience you've ever had?
The craziest baseball experience? Man, I'm not sure. I feel like every game you see something new, but I can't think of one off the head.
Okay, and how about your favorite MLB memory from childhood?
Favorite MLB memory? Probably when I was a grew up big time Cardinals fan. Probably when Albert Pujols hit that home run against the Astros. I think
against
it was in the ninth. That went over the train tracks. Yeah, that was pretty sweet watching that.
That was a pretty good one. Okay, thanks, AJ.
And he was named one of the A's prospects of the year, so it's obvious why they sent him. It's a great chance for these guys to learn and grow. But Jane, what did you hear about his time at this event?
Yeah, I mean, I think from the sounds of it, from what I saw him talk about, he had heard about this before and was really open to the opportunity. I think he's really impressed everyone, in and outside the organization since they drafted him in 2016. I know that the A's are looking forward to seeing him again in spring training. He was in big league camp last year for the first time, less than a year after being drafted. And I mean, he stuck around for a while. Usually those guys, are only around for a couple weeks and then they're gone. But they gave him ample opportunity to pitch in games against big leaguers. And I mean, he really impressed. Just nothing seemed to scare him. He went right after guys. Obviously has that elite velocity, was working on a few things, incorporated his curveball back into the mix, and ended up doing well in his first full professional season. I mean, the fact that he ended the year at Double-A just, speaks to his development. And I would suspect if he doesn't start the season there, You know, we could see him at AAA soon, which would put him on track to hopefully join the A's in 2019, if not sooner. You know, based on the way things are going for him, I really wouldn't be surprised if he was one of those September call-ups. So definitely an exciting name to watch out for, and I think it's kind of cool just because, you know, we've been talking so much about all of the position player prospects that are coming up for the A's, but he's definitely, you know, that guy to watch on the pitching side.
All right. Okay. I'm excited to continue talking about him and see what he can do for the team. And lastly, Jane, we're talking about a free game, the Athletics celebrating 50 years at the Coliseum. So there will be a free game, if I'm understanding this correctly, and tell me if I'm not, on April 17th. What are those details?
Yes, a completely free game, which, I mean, you just don't hear about that.
No.
But it's really cool. I mean, I think the A's in the last year have really done a good job of engaging their fans and, you know, celebrating their history. And I think 50 years is a perfect time to, you know, perfect cause for celebration and for such an initiative. Yeah, I mean, every time I hear about it or read about it, write about it, I'm like, this is still real. This is happening.
Yeah.
So it's very, very cool. I don't think that, you know, you'll see this type of thing again from any team just because it's such a rare thing to happen. So
no, I think we're going to have to wait another 50 years before we would ever see it again, right?
Exactly.
Awesome. All right, Jane. Well, we have covered things way ahead of time, but that's okay because it is never too early to look at what the team could look like. And we know that there are going to be probably some changes after spring training happens, which is exciting though. And we're going to have it all covered. And if anybody needs their fix, because I know everyone needs to get their baseball fix, and you can go to athletics.com and check out all of Jane's work. I'm Dani Wexelman with Jane Lee. Thank you guys for tuning in. Welcome to MLB.com Extras. I'm Dani Wexelman with T.R. Sullivan, who covers the Rangers for MLB.com. T.R., happy Tuesday.
Hey, Dani, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. I'm ready to rock and roll. We got a lot to talk about, T.R., because you, along with 29 of our other reporters, put on your projection hats, and we're going to be talking lineups, rotations, and bullpens as if the season started today. And the Rangers, TR, have a lineup that's basically untouched, intact, but it doesn't mean that things are set in stone. So if the season started today, TR, who can fans expect to be in the opening day lineup?
Well, my best guess would be Delino DeShields in center, Elvis Andrus at short, Shin-Soo Chu at DH, Adrian Beltre at third base, Nomar Mazara in right field, Joey Gallo at first base, Robin Chirinos at catcher, Rougned Odor at second base, and Willie Calhoun in left field. It's a lineup that's got some youth and experience, it's got some power, and it's got some speed. It's got a lot of strikeouts and probably not enough walks, so there's some work to be done there. This is a lineup that depended heavily on home runs last year and needs to have a little bit more balance, which is why they really like a guy like Delino DeShields at the top of their order. You know, if Gallo and Mazara and DeShields really come into their own this year, I mean, this could be a lineup that scores 800, 900 runs and really make the Rangers the offensive power that they usually are.
Okay, we're going to talk about DeShields a little bit later in the podcast, TR, but we'll move on to the rotation. Now, we've talked a lot about the rotation and the Rangers knowing that they probably needed to bring in another guy, another arm, but we've got Cole Hamels, Martin Perez, Doug Fister, Mike Minor, Matt Moore. We also talked about Matt Bushman maybe getting a chance to get into that starting rotation, but is this the set group of guys that do we see anything changing come opening day?
Yeah, Dani, I think there could be changes. The key guy here in all of this is Mike Minor. He's been a pitcher in the past for the Atlanta Braves, but last year he was a reliever for the Kansas City Royals, and he was very, very good. You know, the Rangers signed him with the idea of putting him in the rotation, but, you know, if they go out and get somebody else, I mean, everybody knows Yu Darvish is still unsigned, and Jake Arrieta, and even if they don't play at the top of the free agent market, which they said they won't, there's still other free agents there to be had. You know, Minor could end up in the bullpen and be an extremely valuable piece. So to say that this rotation is set, that may not be the case. And then on the other hand, they still have they still need to go out and get some depth. They need some, whether, you know, some of these guys that you bring in on minor league contracts like they did in the past with A.J. Griffin and Jeremy Guthrie, guys like that, they still need some depth even if they don't go out and get another frontline starter.
Okay, and you mentioned the bullpen, TR. I'm looking at names like Alex Claudio, Jake Diekman, who's on the comeback trail, Keon Akella. Could you give a grade for the bullpen, and could you name the closer for the Rangers?
I give the Rangers bullpen a B because I can't name the closer.
Okay.
Look, Alex Claudio was the closer at the end of last year. He did a very good job. I mean, he was the Rangers pitcher of the year. He's going to be honored at the midwinter banquet on January 19th. I mean, this guy did a terrific job. The problem is he doesn't throw 100 miles an hour, 95 miles an hour. And that seems to be a prerequisite for closers these days. You know, 30, 40 years ago, he would have fit in with a guy like Dan Quisenberry or Sparky Lyle or somebody like that. So, you know, they got some power arms there. Matt Bush being prominent among them. Jake Diekman, Keone Kella, who would be a great closer if he could stay healthy. So they got plenty of candidates, even if they don't go out and find a high-priced one on the free agent market. It's just a matter of, you know, going to spring training and sorting it out and finding out who it is. But you know, this could be a very good bullpen if everybody can stay healthy.
Okay, so still some question marks heading into spring training, but hopefully the Rangers can sort all of that out. Now, another thing that's going on in Rangerland right now, TR, is that the Rangers are going into business with the Nippon Ham Fighters in Japan, and Nick Martinez just signed with them. So we saw Shohei Ohtani come from them and make a huge splash here. Yu Darvish, as you mentioned earlier, who could potentially have a reunion with the Rangers, but the Rangers and the Nippon Ham Fighters will be sharing scouting reports and other baseball operation information. Why is this a good move for the Rangers?
Well, Danny, it's basically expanding your information base. That's a simple matter. I mean, you know, this is not the Ham Fighters are not going to be a Rangers farm system. It doesn't work that way. They're not going to be a farm team. The
okay.
Rangers are not going to be able to go and get whatever fighters they want and bring them over to the big leagues.
Okay.
The Nick Martinez signing with the Fighters was just a great move on his part. It had nothing to do with this relationship. Basically, what this does is give the Rangers, you know, extra information, a bigger base of information, and it does the same way for the Fighters. You know, not only baseball information, but medical information. Both teams are building new ballparks, so that's definitely going to be a part of the whole picture, the two teams sharing information. So basically it's a relationship based on information more than anything else. You know, for Nick Martinez, it's just a fabulous move for him. I mean, this kid was, you know, been up and down with the Rangers over the past 4 years, you know, made about 68 starts for them. Kept going up and down from the minor leagues. This gives him a chance maybe for a year or two to go there, pitch every week, once a week in a six-man rotation, work on his craft, have some success. You know, we've seen it work out in the past for so many pitchers. Colby Lewis, obviously the most prominent one. Miles Mikolas, who just signed a big contract with the Cardinals, is another. Tony Barnett, you know, on and on and on. Doug Miller had a great story on that on MLB.com. So I think this is a great career move for Nick Martinez, and for the Rangers, it's just a way of expanding their information base.
All right, TR, I want to spotlight Lorenzo Cain. He's a hot name right now on the free agent market, which is standing still. We're all still waiting. The hot stove isn't still really not that hot. But when it comes to the Rangers, let's say the Rangers pick him up and Lorenzo Cain is playing center field. Well, in the depth chart, we've got Delino DeShields and Drew Robertson. And we've talked about DeShields and his need to improve his defense, but Cain could come in and take a spot. John Daniels said he wanted to give players, younger position players, an opportunity. So if Cain comes in, what does DeShields do? What happens in that situation?
Well, first of all, the Cain rumor is just a rumor. I mean, that may have been floated out there by his agent trying to drum up business. You know, the Rangers are playing it pretty close to the vest. And, you know, they've talked about maybe they go out and get a center fielder who could help them defensively. Right now, I think the plan is still for DeShields to play center and maybe Drew Robinson push him a little bit, Willie Calhoun in left, and Brian Rua out there as well. If they were to sign Cain, you know, then DeShields goes over to left field maybe to compete with Calhoun for a spot, all four of them there. It's hard to say right now. The Rangers are under a lot of pressure to get more starting pitching. I think that's still their focus, and I think they still want to reinforce their bullpen. You know, maybe they end up getting Lorenzo Cain as a way to just improve the overall ball club rather than one specific area. But right now, I still think DeShields is going to be the starting center fielder.
All right. Putting that rumor to rest is our friend T.R. Sullivan. Listen, if you need to get your Rangers fixed, you can go to Rangers.com and check out all of T.R.'s work and the incredible work that's being done about the Rangers. I'm Dani Wechselman with T.R. Sullivan. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. Welcome to MLB.com Extras. I'm Dani Wechselman with Brian McTaggart, who covers the Astros for MLB.com, Brian. And this week for our podcast, we've asked you to put on your projection hat. And we're projecting bullpens, lineups, and rotations as if the season started today. So I want to get to something that our friend Allison Futter caught. She was at an event with owner Jim Crane, and he came out and said that they're, quote, actively pursuing a high-end starter, not necessarily a free agent, and might be willing to trade. So before we get to what the starting rotation looks like, are there any names that stand out to you that could fit this description?
Yeah, I thought that was very interesting. I mean, the two big free agent pitchers that are out there, of course, are Arrieta and Yu Darvish, and I don't see either one of those guys coming to the Astros. I just don't see the Astros ponying up that kind of money for a starting pitcher. I just don't think that's the way they're going to do business, especially when the rotation's already pretty good. Now, if you make a trade, I think they could do that, and I think that's probably where they're leaning at this point. And the name to look out for there to me is Chris Archer. He's got a very team-friendly deal. He's under contract for a few more years. There's no secret the Rays are trying to, you know, trade away some pieces. And also, he's got a great relationship with A.J. Hinch. They went back and forth a little bit when he was A.J. Hinch was on the coaching staff for the 2015 All-Star Game and built a relationship and so forth. So, I mean, I think he would be a great fit. The issue for the Astros is at what price? I mean, they're going to have to give up some prospects, and they've already done a couple of deals to give up some prospects. But at this point, they're hesitant to give up any other two top prospects, which Forrest Whitley, the pitcher, and Kyle Tucker, the outfielder, and rightfully so. And I still think they would be hesitant to trade either one of those guys, which might mean a deal doesn't work with the Rays. But it's going to be interesting to see, because it looks like they are pushing hard on the trade front. Garrett Cole is another one. They would have him under contract for only two more years. So that's why I think I would like Archer a little bit more if I'm the Astros. But it should be interesting to see if the Astros are willing to part with one of those top guys to get another top of the rotation arm to what is already a deep rotation.
All right, we're going to keep a magnifying glass on that news, yeah, and see what happens. But let's look at the starting rotation. You were asked to project what it would be on opening day. So we've got Verlander, Keuchel, McCullers, Morton, Peacock, McHugh. Who do we got? Who's the starting five?
Well, right now, yes, you have Morton. Down at the bottom, the World Series hero. But Verlander is your ace. There's no question about that. Dallas Keuchel is coming in, another Cy Young Award winner. He's coming in at number two. Lance McCullers Jr., young pitcher on the rise, is number three. Then, you know, you can put in Morton, probably number four. Number five, you could come down to a couple of guys. You have Brad Peacock, who had the breakout year last year in the bullpen and as a starter on occasion. And you also have Colin McHugh, who missed the first 3.5 months last year and then, you know, pitched pretty well, 19-game winner a couple of years ago. So they have some depth there. They have six choices for five spots. And really, it's going to come down, that last spot will come down to McHugh and Peacock. And I think if they go out and get another starting pitcher like we talked about, I think then Peacock is for sure destined for the rotation, and McHugh is probably out of the rotation. But that, you know, that's the price you pay when you have quality depth like that. But I think one through four are set, and number five, it's just a matter of what they do the rest of the winter, and I guess maybe spring training will go a long way to decide if Peacock or McHugh get that final spot.
Okay, so we're waiting and seeing. Spring training will be telling. These next few weeks will obviously be telling as well. So let's look at the lineup, Brian. You said that the World Series lineup is intact heading into 2018, and that is going to be trouble for the rest of the league.
Yeah, for sure. This was the lineup that was the deepest lineup in baseball. You know, maybe that changes now with Stanton going to the Yankees. But you know, the Astros led the majors in pretty much every category: runs, batting average, OPS, slugging. They also struck out fewer times than anybody. They were second in home runs, I believe. But, you know, if you look at the top of the lineup, is coming back intact. Springer, World Series MVP. Bregman, who's a budding star at number two. Altuve, MVP at number three. Correa, MVP caliber player at four. After that, I mean, it depends on how you want to mix them up. But you have Gurriel, who had a very solid year. You have Brian McCann is back at catcher, hitting lower in the lineup. You know, what do you do in left field? Marwin Gonzalez is back off a career year. Is he going to play left, or is he going to move around a little bit, play some different positions? DH, Carlos Beltran is gone, but, I mean, his playing time was diminished as the year went on. So you're going to have Evan Gattis back, maybe getting more bats. I still think there's a chance they could add, you know, like a left field DH guy to that lineup. So it's the deepest lineup in baseball, and, you know, other than losing Beltran, which is not a big loss considering, you know, how he was used last year, everyone's coming back, and that's bad news for the rest of the AL West for sure.
All right, I like to hear that. And moving to the bullpen, Brian, the Astros let go of Luke Gregerson, but they've got Ken Giles, Joe Musgrove, Chris Dragon, Davinsky, Will Harris. They're still a force to be reckoned with, right?
Yeah, the bullpen was a weakness last year. That's no secret. I mean, look at the way they managed the bullpen in the playoffs. I mean, A.J. Hinch put Giles on the bench for the last three games of the World Series. And in the playoffs, he used in some really big spots. He went to some of his starters. I mean, Justin Verlander in Game 4 of the ALDS, Game 7 of the ALCS. McCullers closes it. Game 7 of the World Series, Charlie Morton, the starter, pitches the last four innings. But they did go out and at the winter meetings did add a pair of veteran quality arms. Joe Smith comes in, a very nice pickup, the side armor. I think he's going to fit in very nicely. Hector Rondon from the Cubs, a little bit of an off year last year, but his strikeout rate went up. He was very good the 2 years before that. They still could use another left-hander. We all know there's a lot of guys on the market. But for me, the bullpen comes down to Giles. He's got to put it all together. He had a pretty good regular season, too inconsistent at times. I think he's got to put it together between the ears a little bit. Will Harris is very steady. You like him back there. Davinsky wore down a little bit in the second half, but he's an all-star. You like him. Joe Musgrove was a revelation after he moved from the rotation to the bullpen in 23 starts. He was unhittable. Then you add in Joe Smith and Rondon, and all of a sudden a bullpen that was pretty good is now has a chance to be really good. But it's going to come down for me to Giles. He's going to have to be more consistent closing out some of these games, not be so messy in letting guys get on base and overcome the issues he had in the playoffs.
Pending health, Brian, I don't hear a lot of holes in the bullpen, in the lineup, in the starting rotation. It sounds like this team is pretty sound. And, you know, a lot of these guys are tweeting and chirping about going back-to-back, and it doesn't seem too far out of the question at this point, which is pretty exciting as we head right into spring training. And another guy I want to look at, Brian, is Derek Fisher, 24 years old. He's looking to make his mark in left field for the Astros. Our MLB Pipeline's Jim Callis caught up with Derek Fisher at last weekend's Rookie Career Development Program, and here's what he had to say.
Derek, how much had you heard about the Rookie Career Development Program before you came here? And you've been in the big leagues already, but how much do you think this stuff will help you going forward? How much of it do you wish you maybe had known some of before you got to the big leagues the first time?
You know, I think it's big for all of us because you can never hear enough of what we're hearing, and there's a reason why we're hearing so much of it, is because it continues to happen, and there's some of them are good and some are bad, but you continue to hear about it for a reason. So when you continue to hear about things like that, you start to take a little bit more of an initiative to, like, the people around you and the things that you're doing on a day-to-day basis, because they really do affect you.
Not only was this it would have been a big year for you anyway, you know, making your major league debut and getting some playing time, but, I mean, you're part of a World Series win, and not only were you part of a World Series win, you actually scored the game-winning run in one of the most exciting games.
Yeah.
Can you just talk about what it was like the last couple months, you know, winning the division, going to the playoffs, and then bringing a championship to a city that was starved for a positive news story after getting hit by a hurricane?
Yeah, I mean, this whole year has been pretty tremendous. I mean, with the team that we were able to put together, and being, you know, pretty familiar with that team in spring training. I spent the whole time in spring training with them, and being able to just pick their brains, just understand the people that they were. And then obviously from the outside looking in, as the whole country saw, I mean, before I was even there, just watching games every day, just to be able to see, like, this team has a lot of fun. And I just wanted to be a part of it and be able to just contribute to a team that questionably is one of the best ever. And I think for somebody like me or anyone that could have been in that position, it was a lot of fun just to be with that group and do what we did, because it was something that obviously we'd been pushing for so long.
I mean, you got to be an active participant too. I mean, a simple question, but I mean, what's it like scoring the game-winning run in a game like Game 5, one of the craziest World Series games anybody's ever seen?
Yeah, I mean, the games are a little different when you're in the dugout, and that's something that I learned once I was able to just see the game from a TV screen, just to be able to look back and be able to watch and be able to really see what went on, because, you know, the up and down of the entire series was definitely something that shows a lot about the team and the group of guys that we had on a day-to-day basis to show up and be able to play the way that we did and be able to watch, the World Series MVP and then ultimately the AL MVP, to be able to watch them on a day-to-day basis is something that some people can't say that they've ever seen.
Now that you've been in the big leagues, the next step is to win an everyday job and become a regular. From your time in the big leagues, what have you learned that you're going to need to, what adjustments you're going to have to make to get an everyday role?
Preparation is key, and that's something that I can honestly say that wasn't really a big part of my game even up to, 2 years ago. So to be able to see, there's a reason why, and I forget who said about it earlier in the program today, there's a reason why the best people are just different. And I saw that this year with some of arguably the best pitcher of our generation and Justin Verlander and how he prepares on a day-to-day basis and how much that correlates to what has been said here tonight. Is honestly preparation, and it's impressive, and it shows you how long and how why these people can play the game for so long.
We have a series of just kind of fun questions we've been asking people. What uniform number do you wear, and why did you pick that number?
I wear 21 this year in the big leagues. 22 is my favorite number, so the reason why I'm not wearing 21 is probably because Reddick wears 22.
Okay. Why is 22 your favorite number?
It was always a number I wore as a kid, and I loved football growing up, and for some reason 22 is a number that I've just stuck with my entire life.
Okay. How about, do you have a celebrity lookalike? Does anybody say you look like anybody in particular? You never get any of that?
No.
Okay. How about craziest baseball experience?
That's an easy one, man. Postseason. There was nothing like it. The postseason and ultimately the World Series. It's exactly what you'd expect it to be.
How about your favorite MLB memory from your childhood?
Oh, boy. Still Jeter's last game and ending it in a walk-off. That was probably because Derek Jeter was my favorite player growing up. And that was something that I'll never forget. And the squat that he took at shortstop after the inning.
Now, what I need to know, Brian, what the fans need to know, why was this guy chosen? And do you think he can occupy a regular role for 2018 with the Astros?
Well, last year he came up to the big leagues at the end of the year, got his feet wet, only played in a handful of games, struck out a lot, did show some of the tools that, why the Astros liked him, that power. He can really run, not a great defender. But that run power, that speed power combination is pretty rare. So I think they wanted to send him there just to, he's a guy on the come and a guy I think that has done everything he can in the minor leagues. It's time to see what he can do in the big leagues. Of course, he had a huge moment in the World Series scoring the winning run in Game 5 when he pinch ran for McCann. But this is going to be a big spring and a big season for him because, like we talked about, there's potential for an opening in left field, and that that could be his spot. And if they don't go out and get a left fielder, that's sort of going to be an open competition in left field. Yeah, Marwin Gonzalez is going to play there, but they want Marwin to move around more. So if Fisher can go out there and take the bull by the horns, he could be their starting left fielder. That being said, the Astros are going to swing a trade for one of these pitchers that they're after. I think Derek Fisher is more than likely included. A couple of years ago, they nearly traded him to the Phillies in the Ken Giles deal. The deal had to be reworked, and they ended up keeping him. But so it's sort of a sink or swim, or maybe even a move on year for Fisher and the organization. So he's certainly going to be one to watch here in the next few weeks, and going into spring training, see if he's ready to step up and get that really the one spot in the offense where you're wondering who's going to get those at bats, and Fisher's got a shot to do that in left field.
All right, we're all just waiting for these chips to fall. It's just a huge domino effect.
Yeah.
At this point, every team is just waiting for those couple of guys to get off the board, and it's all going to happen. If you still need to get your Astros fixed, your Brian McTaggart fixed, you can go to astros.com and read all of that good stuff. Brian, I always appreciate your time. I'm Danny Wexelman. Thank you guys so much for tuning in. Welcome to MLB.com Extras. I'm Danny Wexelman with Richard Justice, our executive correspondent here at MLB.com, and he is going to be filling in for Maria Guardado, who covers the Angels for MLB.com. Richard, how are you doing?
I'm going to try to fill in for Maria. No one can actually fill in for Maria. I'm just going to try. I'm going to say some words, and then hopefully she will not listen and say, oh, wait, he got that wrong.
Fingers crossed. I know Maria is taking a little time before spring training starts, which everyone should. But, Richard, we're not going to take any time off. We're diving right in because apparently it's never too early to look at what the Angels' starting lineup, rotation, and bullpen could look like. So I'm asking you, with the help from Maria, she's done some research, she's put out a couple of articles on angels.com, I need you to put your projection hat on, and we're going to begin with the lineups. We know the Angels fortified their lineup with the addition of Shohei Ohtani, Ian Kinsler, Justin Upton, and so if the season started today, Richard, take me through the lineup.
This is a much better lineup than the Angels had on opening day last year. General Manager Billy Epler has had a great offseason. No GM in baseball, other than maybe Brian Cashman, who went out and got the National League MVP, Giancarlo Stanton, has had a better offseason. He's filled the holes at second, in left field, at third base, and they have a very, very, very good defensive team. But, okay, the season started today. Ian Kinsler would lead off and play second base. I'm cribbing these notes from Maria Guardado, our regular Angels beat writer. The best player on the planet would hit second, Mike Trout. And then I think the way Mike Socia would look at it would be Justin Upton would play left field. And it's interesting. Now you put Trout and Upton back-to-back, and then you have Albert Pujols. You know, honestly, we're not sure where Albert Pujols is at this point in his career, what he's still capable of. But I think he's going to have more protection, more base runners around him. He's going to force pitchers to throw to him, and that's a good thing. Cole Calhoun, who is a feared hitter in his own right, is behind him. One of my favorite players in all of baseball, Zach Cozart, is going to hit behind Calhoun right now. And he is coming off his best season, a true pro. Again, back to the defense. With Cozart and Andrelton Simmons on the left side of the infield, Trout in center, Kinsler at second base, and Martin Maldonado behind the plate. This is a really good team that's going to prevent a lot of runs. And the most interesting player in baseball is going to hit behind Cozart. That's Maria's projection, is Shohei Ohtani. It's the one thing everyone's going to be watching. I had a guy ask me the other day, he said, okay, if a guy has 10 wins as a pitcher and 20 homers as a hitter, what do you call that guy? And I said, I think you call that guy that possibly the American League MVP. You know, no one has done what Shohei Ohtani's trying to do. Yeah. No one's done it in 99 years, since Babe Ruth's last year with the Red Sox in 1919. So we'll see if he can do it. You know, some of us who've been around pitchers like Scherzer and Verlander, mm-hmm. and see the intensity of their workouts between starts, and not sure how, you know, is he going to pitch one day, take a day off, play first, DH, play the outfield, whatever. But it's going to be great fun to watch. He's a young guy. He's, you know, our MLB pipeline people have him rated as a top prospect as both a hitter and a pitcher. We just haven't seen this in a long time. Andrelton Simmons, as good a defensive shortstop as there is in baseball, is going to hit eighth, and then Martin Maldonado, one of the great arms among catchers in baseball, is going to hit ninth. It's a lineup that's deeper. I mean, the last couple of years, how Mike Socia had to manufacture runs and all of that. It's going to be a new world for Mike Socia with, you know, even coming off not his best year, Ian Kinsler. He is an upgrade. Zach Cozart is an upgrade. And Justin Upton is potentially a big upgrade to hitting between Trout and Pujols.
Absolutely. And I talked about this a little bit earlier in the week. I feel like Billy Epler won the offseason when it comes to his position and what he's done for this team. So with no further ado, let's talk about Shohei Ohtani a little bit more, because why not? And let's look at the starting rotation. The Halos have some strong arms ready to compete, Richard. So on opening day for that week, opening week, who can Angels fans expect to see starting those games?
Well, if the baseball gods are being fair, it'll be Garrett Richards. He's had two very frustrating years. And the last time we saw him at his best, he was a number one starter on a really good team. Nobody has better stuff. This is the thing. This is the unknown quantity. Their top four starters are Garrett Richards, Andrew Haney, a young lefty, Tyler Skaggs, and Matt Shoemaker. Those four guys last year, I believe they started 41 games. What has to happen is it's not that complicated. You have to keep those guys healthy. If you keep Richards and Shoemaker healthy, and then Haney and Skaggs or young guys coming off injuries, if they can take the mound, I don't know what the number is, 100 times, 120 times, you know, the more the better, the Angels are going to be formidable. They're going to be really good. They're going to the playoffs. And one of the things that happened last year is that there were so many injuries that J.C. Ramirez proved that he can start. Parker Bridwell proved that he could start. It created some depth there that they didn't have before. And then Shohei Ohtani, he's going to be in that rotation somewhere. And I don't know if that means a six-man rotation. You know, in Japan, he pitched once a week. That's been an issue when we evaluate Yu Darvish. Does he need more rest as opposed to just being on the regular five-man rotation? This we know. Mike Socha is one of the smartest managers in baseball, and he's going to figure it out. He's going to figure out what's best for this young guy in terms of when do you play him, when do you hit him, when do you pitch him, and all of that. And we're all going to be watching.
Yeah, I think the entire baseball world, every player, every manager, every front office is going to have their eyes on the Angels and seeing what they do exactly with Shohei Ohtani and how well he does. I know I'm going to be watching. It's cool. I think it's just fair to say it's really cool to see.
And Richard, going along with the starting rotation. The trickle-down effect from that.
Yeah.
You know, the Rays used the fourth pick in the draft on a kid from the University of Louisville last year, Brendan McKay.
Yes.
And he played first base, DH'd, and pitched. And these scouts are always looking at college players and just trying to decide, is he a hitter or is he a pitcher? I've known guys that Brian Bokosiewicz of the Astros was drafted as a pitcher, ended up having a major league career as a hitter. And Brett Eibner pitched at Arkansas, played center field at Arkansas. Mm-hmm. The Dodgers sent him back to the minor leagues last year to relearn how to pitch so he could take up two roster spots. He ended up undergoing Tommy John surgery. When he comes back, the Dodgers are in how this works out with Ohtani will be a factor in this, but the Dodgers are committed to letting him, one guy, take up two roster spots. It's fascinating. What it tells you is that these young general managers, these young data-driven general managers, are willing to look at the world in a way that we haven't looked at it in a long time. And that's a fun thing for all of us.
Absolutely. All right, Richard, my friend, let's move on to the bullpen. So Billy Epler has made it clear that there may not be traditional roles when it comes to his bullpen, specifically in naming an official closer. Can you give me a little more insight into what the bullpen can look like?
Yeah, you're going to have to. Mike Socha is a more traditional guy, and I think by opening day he would like to have it figured out. Now, what Billy has done is add veteran Jim Johnson to the mix there. There are four guys at the back of the bullpen. And Blake Parker right now probably would be the closer. But one of the things that happens is when you have so many injuries, you have to give other guys a chance. So Blake Parker and Blake Wood both proved last year they're major league pitchers. And Cam Bedrosian has closer stuff. I think he was penciled in to be the setup guy for Houston Street a year ago. Houston Street's still a free agent. I wouldn't completely rule out him coming back. So I think in some order there at the end, and Jose Alvarez, left-hander, also figures into the mix. So I just think they're going to go to camp and know that Parker, Bedrosian, and Wood have closer stuff. Jim Johnson has been one of the best closers in baseball. I don't know that he's still capable of pitching at that level. But it's like it's just like the rotation in that you look at it and say, I love what they got there. I think they've got a chance to be really good. But there are question marks or injuries and all of that. I'm telling you, this team is good enough to play a long time in October. Last year was Mike Socia's best managing job, to survive and to be in contention the last 2 weeks of the season with the injuries they had was phenomenal. And those of us who know Mike and root for the guy, and know Billy Epler and root for him, and want to see Mike Trout on the biggest stage the game has, it could be a fun year in Anaheim.
And another guy I think that people are rooting for, Richard, is Rene Rivera, who was just added to the backstop depth. He's going to compete with Martin Maldonado, who did win his first Gold Glove last season. But why is this such a smart move for the Angels?
Rene Rivera is a guy that I can tell you a dozen scouts that have said this guy's going to be an all-star. And I think what he does is just gives you, just adds depth to it. I think that when they got Martin Maldonado last year, they thought, okay, he'll share the job with somebody, but he's just so good. He shuts down the running game. And when you look at, you're going to have Cozart, Simmons, Kinsler, and Trout in center field and up in the left. You're above average defensively a lot of spots. And so, and when you have young pitchers like Haney and Skaggs, what you want them to do is have confidence in the catcher, and just don't think, just throw. Whatever he does, you do, and that allows you to get into a rhythm. But Rene Rivera is a guy that, at points in his career, it looks like he's going to be a big-time hitter. He prides himself on handling the pitchers and all of that. It makes the Angels better. That's one of those moves, not unlike going to get Jim Johnson, that you don't really think much about when it's done. Then you look up at the end of the year and go, ooh, that, we won a couple of games because of that guy.
Yeah, Richard, I am I'm on your side here. I'm pretty excited for this team. I'm excited to see what Mike Socia can do with all these different players and different talents, and it's going to be a wild 2018. That's all I know, and the spotlight's going to be on the Angels. So, as always, my friend, I am so appreciative of your time and your intelligence. I love hearing your story, so thank you for sharing.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. If you need your Angels fix, you can head to angels.com and read all that good stuff. I'm Danny Wexelman. Thank you guys so much for tuning in. Welcome to MLB.com Extras. I'm Danny Wexelman with Greg Johns, who covers the Mariners for MLB.com. Greg, happy Tuesday. How are you doing today?
I'm good. We're getting into the meat of January, so I know we're getting closer to spring training, and that's always a good thing.
It is the meat. You are correct on that. And it's never too early, Greg. We're going to have some fun today looking ahead and projecting. You're going to put your projection hat on. I know that all the team reporters have been working really hard on what would happen if we looked at lineups, rotations, and bullpens if the season started today. So we're going to start with that. We're going to start at lineups. And the Mariners have had two really nice additions to shake up their lineup, Ryan Healy and D. Gordon. And like I said, we're in January, but we're going to take a closer look at what the starting lineup would look like if the season started today, Greg. So tell me, what would that lineup look like?
Yeah, it's interesting because a lot of my MLB.com brethren probably, with some holes in those lineups, not knowing exactly, where they're going to end up in 5 weeks there, because so many free agents still out there. But the Mariners are a team that's pretty set on where they're going. Jerry DePoto with his moves early in the offseason, really getting, as he mentioned, Gordon, who's going to, I think, really turn that lineup around this year with leading off. And that's going to be a big deal. I mean, you got a guy that can hit 308 last year. So he's a 300-plus hitter that's led the NL in stolen bases. In fact, led the major leagues in stolen bases three of the last 4 years and stole 60 bags last year. So this is a guy that changes the lineup. He gets on base, and suddenly pitchers are worrying about D. Gordon, and he's as good a base runner as there is in baseball. So I like where they're going with that. And you get Gordon, and that bumps Gene Segura down to number two. So now you got another guy that's a 300-plus hitter that can steal bases. So put a lot of pressure on teams, and that leads you into that great Cano, Cruz, Seager 3-4-5 mm-hmm. that they've leaned on for a long time. And I guarantee you that Nelson Cruz, who led the American League in RBIs last year, is plenty happy to see what's happening in front of him in that lineup and chance to drive in more runs. So, that's a pretty solid top of the lineup. And then you add Healy in there. I don't know if they're going to bat him six, but I think that's a pretty good chance. He's a guy that hit 25 bombs and 270, 280 for the A's in his first year and a half in the bigs. So he's got some pop, and it would be a nice fit right behind those guys. But we'll see, because then you've got Mitch Haniger, Ben Gamel, and Mike Zunino that are going to line up somewhere in that bottom third of the lineup. And I think that's where, Danny, that it tells you this lineup is significantly better just by bringing in D. Gordon, because, you know, a year ago, Haniger and Gamel, the two rookies, had very good years and were spent a lot of the year hitting second and hitting up high in that lineup. You know, they're now down at the bottom of the order because Gordon is up there, and that just adds depth to this lineup. So you drop in a Gamel, a Haniger down at the bottom of the order and get some speed on the bases to flip it back up to Gordon at the top, and then you throw Zunino in there coming off a very good year with 25 homers, and he had a heck of a year last year. So this is the deepest lineup I've seen in a long time, Danny, and with some good versatility with that speed and power in the middle.
And also, Greg, it reminds me, it's kind of like having, you almost have like three leadoff guys with that 1, 2, and 9 spot, which is always handy for a manager to have keys like that and kind of tricks up his sleeve to have speed and consistency in those positions. So let's also look at the starting rotation, Greg. We have talked about James Paxton and Felix Hernandez at length the past couple of weeks now, and the starting rotation looks pretty solid, and the key, of course, is going to be health, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's no doubt if you're looking at a question mark with the Mariners, it's the rotation. I like the group, but it's one of those things that things have to fall into place. And they didn't last year. If they do fall in place, it's a pretty good group. If not, you do have some questions. And I don't think you can avoid, you know, that the health issue of Paxton and Felix at the top there. Those guys that just have to stay healthy if this group's going to be as good as they want to be. I don't think there's any question. And Paxton, to me, is a legit number one starter and is really a guy any team would want, leading off that pack. And Felix, a big question mark. You know, he's got to bounce back. I think he can, but he's got to do it. And he's going to be a little bit different pitcher to succeed. Now, he's not the same guy he was when he was 24. He's 32 and got some miles on that arm, but certainly capable and certainly a smart pitcher. And he's got to pitch that way. He's got to be smart with what he's doing. And if he can stay healthy as he did 2 years ago, he's getting votes for Cy Young. He's a legit number one pitcher 2 years ago. So not that far removed, but yeah, there is a question mark there. And then you get beyond that. Mike Leake, I really like. It's the number three guy. I think Mariner fans got a chance to see him a little last year. He's just a durable guy that's pitched 180 plus innings for 6 years in a row, and a guy you can really count on there. Ground ball pitcher, which is kind of a nice addition to what's largely a fly ball rotation. So I like Leake there in the third, and then you get Erasmo Ramirez, a guy, a veteran that's been around a while, but in and out of the bullpen. I think you put him in that starting rotation, and he showed at the end of the year he could be pretty effective there. He's not a top of the rotation guy, but if you're talking 4 or 5 starter, pretty good guy to have on your staff. And then 5, I think Marco Gonzalez, kind of, to me, is probably the guy there just based on going into camp, but I think that's going to be a pretty good competition between him and Ariel Miranda. Andrew Moore, Max Posey is going to come in and give it a shot. I mean, they got some options there. I think you can see who steps up. But Marco, to me, Danny, has an obvious edge for he's out of minor league options, and he's a guy that they're going to want to get in that rotation just to keep him on the roster. So I think he's going to, if he pitches well at all this spring, I think he's got a pretty good shot at that number 5 spot.
And then, of course, we're going to move to the bullpen now because that makes the most sense, Greg. And they've got a number of arms. I'm wondering, can you give a grade for the bullpen if it was intact today, and who's the closer for the Mariners?
Yeah, I think the bullpen is a strength of this team, and I would give them a good, I'd say B+.
Okay.
I think Jerry DePoto would give you an A+. I'll wait and see on some guys. I think a few questions. David Phelps, they need to have healthy. But Juan Nicasio is their big offseason addition, Danny. And you mentioned closer. Edwin Diaz will be the closer, but Nicasio has closed games in the Cardinals, so we're trying to sign him to come in and compete for their closer spot. So he's a legit guy, a hard thrower. Really going to add to that setup. I like their setup group a lot. You know, they really, really leaned on Nick Vincent the last few years, and he was very, very good and got worn out in some situations just being used so much. But you had Nicasio and David Phelps, who came in at the end of the last year. These are big-time guys that can set up. You got some eighth-inning options there and can use some flexibility there, so you're not going to hopefully wear those guys down as much. get to Diaz in the ninth, and it's a pretty good hard-throwing group, and you throw in some young power arms. James Pazos is a lefty that they really like, Dan Altavilla, Nick Rumbelow, a guy they got from the Yankees that they really like a lot as well. So, and then Mark Zepchinski, the veteran lefty setup guy, situational guy. So,
they've
got
some
good
depth
there in that bullpen. I really like where they're going there.
Yeah, and Mark Zepchinski's got one of the most fun names. Scrabble, I think, is his nickname because of the letters and all the consonants he's got in his name with a P-C-Z-Y-N-S-K moment going on there in his name, Greg.
It's not a fun name when you're on deadline trying to write it real quick.
That's right. Yeah. Or your autocorrect in your iPhone, I'm sure.
Exactly.
Okay, Greg. So it sounds like that's what it should be like. I don't think there's going to be too many changes when we hit opening day for the Mariners, which is pretty good news, and that's exciting for fans to start to get to know these players and kind of dive into who they are. There's another guy, Dan Vogelbach, and he had the chance to go to the Rookie Career Development Program that just happened last weekend, and it's a really good opportunity for players to learn and grow in the game. Our MLB Pipeline's Jim Callis caught up with Dan Vogelbach last weekend at the Rookie Career Development Program, and here's what he had to say.
Daniel, after being up with the Mariners in September, what did you learn that you're going to need to do to make that jump for good?
Just to continue to slow the game down and continue to get more reps and continue to realize that, I do belong and I can play up there like I know I can. And just continuing to watch the veteran guys and Seager and Cano and Cruz and the way they go about their business each and every day and attacking each day.
You've had a lot of success at the AAA level. You've played briefly at the big league level. How much of a difference is there between the two levels from what you've seen so far?
And it's definitely, those are the best guys in the world. They're there for a reason. And, they stay there for a reason. I think the biggest thing is realizing that you belong and it just still is baseball. And, taking the name off the back of the jersey and just realizing that he's still throwing a fastball and he's still throwing a curveball and a changeup. And I think when you get to that, it makes the game a lot easier.
Have the Mariners asked you to work on anything in particular this offseason to get ready for spring training?
Just the same old. I continue to work at first and I'm finally confident over there as I am at the plate. And, I took it upon myself to make some adjustments at the plate and with my swing and, continue to better myself each and every day in every aspect of my game.
Okay. Just have some fun questions we're asking everybody. Okay. What uniform number do you wear and why'd you pick that one?
I wear 20. That was the number that when I was at the Cubs in spring training, when they asked, if you get called up, what number would you like? And I've always wore 24 and 11. Well, both of them were taken, so I just said 20. And when I got called up with the Mariners, that was the one. And obviously, I can't wear 24 with the Mariners because it's a pretty important number there. So 20 is just what I went with.
Got you. Do you have a celebrity lookalike that people say you resemble?
No, not that I know of.
Okay. How about a craziest baseball experience?
Ooh. My debut. When Seager hit a single and I went first to third and I missed second base and it's a fielder's choice and I took a hit away from Seager. Thank goodness he's a good human being and a good dude and, we're okay now.
What did he say to you?
He said, I can basically just hug you right now, so I need you to get up and take the anger out and hug you. Good thing he usually doesn't need that hit because he does okay for himself every single year.
And how about your favorite MLB memory from your childhood?
Ooh, like what I was watching? I loved watching Chipper Jones play. I felt like he played with that attitude and that, swagger that he knew he was good, and every time he went out there, he knew he was going to have a good game. And I feel like you need that to play at this level. And I really enjoyed watching him play.
And I'm wondering, why was he chosen for this event, Greg?
Well, they sent four of their prospects back there. I think Dan's a guy that they really like. I think he's one of the kind of young leader type guys on this group. The kid's coming up. He's 25 years old. Came into camp last year with a chance to win a spot He was going to platoon with Danny Valencia and end up having a little rough spring. Went sent back to AAA. He's proved everything he can prove at AAA. So his opportunity now is just to crack that major league group and show what he can do in the big leagues. And they really like what he can offer. 6-foot kid just a spark. He's just a fire plug, I guess. But 250, but about 6 feet. I mean, but with good bat control, an on-base guy with good power, and those guys are hard to find. So what he needs to do is just kind of relax to me, and I think that's part of sending him to this rookie developmental camp, get him around other top prospects in baseball and just kind of talk about leadership and things like that. He came up last September, so September call-up, and was just kind of the guy in the locker room taking it all in, learning from Seager and Cruz and Cano and kind of doing that. And I think he learned a lot. I remember talking to him at the end of the last year. Danny was just talking about, hey, I just need to come in and play my game. You know, he's going to work on the footwork around first base, just relax and play. And it's just little things. I remember the last game of last year, he came in at the end of the game. They brought him in and had a couple of hits, ripped a double off the wall down in Anaheim. And I thought, this is a kid, you know, if he relaxes, he might surprise people a little bit. It'll be fun to see what Dan can do this spring.
All right, we'll wait and see for that. And Greg, last but most certainly not least, I want to remember Wayne Norton. I personally did not know Wayne, but I know that you did. He battled Lou Gehrig's disease and recently passed away and left a huge mark on the Mariners in Canada and in Europe. He's credited for drafting James Paxton. I'm wondering if you can tell me a little bit more about Wayne.
Yeah, Wayne is a guy that he's been with the Mariners since 2001. I think Pat Gillick brought him in, and he was just kind of Mr. Canada baseball, a guy that coached up there, was really involved with youth developmental programs and just a huge part of Canadian developmental baseball. And got into scouting with the Mariners and really, you know, just kind of owned Canada and also did some international scouting with them. We're talking Michael Saunders, Tyler O'Neill, guys like that, Paxton. This is and overseas, Alex Liddy, a name Mariner fans familiar with. Greg Hallman passed away a few years ago from the Netherlands. Dylan Unsworth, kid from South Africa, that's in the minor leagues now with them. I mean, he's a guy that uncovered a lot of talent, and I know that they always felt good having Canada covered with Wayne Norton up there. And he was interesting. You know, you mentioned Lou Gehrig's disease. He was an elderly man. He was in his mid-70s when he got Lou Gehrig's disease, which is tough. But he kept, tells you all about him, Dan. He kept scouting. And he would go with his wife. They'd been married 50-some years. And they would keep going to games. And she would hold the radar gun. He would talk, and she would take the notes and make, you know, his observations and write them down. And he kept working. He was still working until he passed away this past weekend. So 75 years old, Wayne Norton, a Hall of Famer up in Canada and one of the top Mariner scouts for a long, long time. So, yeah, Wayne will be missed. He had a chance to throw out the first pitch one of the final games last year in a wheelchair, and they got out there and had him throw a first pitch at Safeco and threw it to James Paxton behind the plate. Kind of a nice moment, and glad they got to do that with Wayne, and chance for Seattle to see him a little bit and what he meant to the organization.
That's awesome. I think that Wayne will probably be watching down over the Mariners this season and crossing his fingers that those lineups, bullpens, and starting rotations all pan out with all of those guys. So thank you for sharing a little bit about Wayne, Greg, and thank you always for your time and your patience and your incredible information. We've got a really fun rest of the month ahead of us heading into spring training. So I really appreciate your time, Greg.
You bet, Danny. Always good talking to you.
All right. If you need your Mariners fix, you can go to Mariners.com. I'm Danny Wexelman with Greg Johns. Thanks for tuning in.